Thank you very much. How many of you have seen indoctrination? Put your hand up if you've seen it. Okay. And keep your hand up if you hate the public schools. Okay, very good. Well, my job here is done. Thank you very much. This lecture, I think, is an interest for particularly for people that are interested in filmmaking. But I don't want that to exclude anyone. But the subject of documentary filmmaking is a subject close to my heart. It's something I really believe in. I've actually now devoted my life in a significant way to the production of documentary films. This is sort of a circuitous route via several career paths that I took. The first one, I was an architect, and then worked as an architect for a very short period of time, and then moved into animation. And I was an animator for quite a few years in California, Northern California, in the Silicon Valley, working actually in the video games industry, Atari, and I was looking for something like more fruitful I could do with my skills. And a lot of you here, and a lot of you in the homeschooling world, have particular skills, and you're probably recognizing those in the young men specifically, and the young women to an extent in a different way, but the young men particularly. We notice the young men like computers, they like cameras, they like techie things, and they're very good at it, and they may put us to shame. The older ones look to them, and I've made a career relying on young guys who know how to use computers very well to make our movies. And so this seminar, I want you to realize that there's real possibilities here, and it was a possibility for me from coming from nowhere to being a producer, full-time producer of documentary films. And so for your family and your friends and young men that you have around you, there's hope. There is a way for them. It's very interesting how a college degree has absolutely no relevance in our realm. We don't care if you've got a degree. In fact, we're less likely to hire you because we're worried about the entitlement mentality that you get from people with degrees. I've got degrees, so I'm not prejudiced. But you realize there's people who think they're it because they have a degree. We're very much about portfolio. What can you do for me? And the good thing is a lot of these young guys get very good at particular things and are able to help very significantly at a very young age. In their early 20s, they're able to do the things that we can't do particularly well. So this message is to a lot of you who are maybe thinking about either producing a documentary or having your children get involved in the film industry, or just are interested in documentary films or urge documentary film in particular. So here's the Indoctrination trailer if you haven't seen it.
I want to see a child in every public school in America who is trained as a witness for Jesus Christ.
When you send that child off to school today, you're sending them into a pagan society.
And the studies are showing that there's virtually no discernible difference between the church and the world. At what point is Son of Man going to rise up and say, enough is enough?
Whatever we vote for, we are no longer a Christian nation.
We've got to do something different. The schools are failing.
And I'll go to 6 or 7 days a week, and that's going to be Friday.
You're not going to be painting, okay? You're going to be writing down whatever comes to your mind when you hear the word gay or when you hear the word lesbian.
So love is right or wrong? There's no
either. That's right.
They are stealing our children. But because they are leaving the body of the child with us, we don't even know what's happening.
If I had my way, government education would be brought to a halt.
Trying to fix public education is like trying to teach a pig how to dance. You get dirty, the pig gets mad.
Turning your children over to total strangers and having those strangers work on your child's mind, it's a bad idea.
Public schools have become a criminal enterprise.
Parents are willing to admit that there are these problems and yet believe that their children will somehow escape. They won't.
And it may have taken a school shooting to wake us up, to see the danger, but that's a very small danger compared to all the other things that go on that can destroy our children.
A teacher is in trouble for bringing a religion into his classroom, but should he lose his
When you go into a public school, we have to leave you out of the door. It just came to a point where I couldn't do that anymore.
Jesus said, build your house upon the rock. But the foolish man refused the words of Christ. We would not build their education systems on the fear of God, the words of Christ.
Everything exists to proclaim the glory of God. And the one place where we send our kids 7 hours a day is a place where God's name can't be mentioned. It's not indoctrination. It's insanity.
So that's a trailer for indoctrination. Now, I want to talk to you about why we're making documentaries. One of the things that we have realized is that there's a real need for an independent Christian voice in this sphere. The interesting thing is what's happening in the documentary sphere, both on the irreligious right, left, and irreligious right for that matter, and us over here in the Christian conservative sphere, is that documentaries are becoming the place where ideas are being pushed and sold. And it's where people are talking. It's primarily, in my opinion, apart from maybe talk radio or mainstream news, independent documentaries are having a considerable influence in people's lives. I think part of the reason for that is a lot of people are moving away from mainstream media. They distrust mainstream media because of, well, its track record and being partisan and lying and getting things wrong. We as independents, those that are not part of MSNBC or CNN or any of these other big organizations, have a voice that is very clearly our voice. And so when we produce this film, it is me that you're listening to. Now, there's a collective when it's our films. There's a handful of people that work on the project and have an influence on the project. But in terms of the film itself, it is an independent voice. It's me that's talking to you. The other aspect of documentaries, I think, it merits the sort of acceleration within the documentary sphere, is that they're you're able to produce long form and intelligent media. Most of what, no offense to Adam McManus here, but if you listen to talk radio, it's become short form and it's very staggered, you know, lots of advertising. I still listen to talk radio. I like other forms of media. I'm very interested in Christian media. But what we've found is that what documentaries, the opportunity you have with a documentary is you have an hour and a half to sell people on an idea, which is, you know, you can commit yourself to other forms of media and they have purpose and they're good. We're not saying that documentaries are better, but what documentaries do offer is the ability to make that significant case and that that everything that you need to say. It's never everything, but it's as much as you can, that hour and a half. Most sermons average probably, well, in the evangelical world, maybe less than an hour. If it's Don Hart, it's between 2 and 3 hours. But most sermons are shorter than our films. It's hard to get people to listen to sermons. It's hard to get people to listen to books. What we have with the documentary is this one little singular DVD that sums up the best arguments that we can have, and it's Christian. And the opportunity for Christians to be involved in this market is amazing. That's what we've seen with indoctrination. You saw the trailer there, and it's got scripture all the way through, but our film has gone beyond our community. You know, it's in the conspiracy theory world, for some reason it's interesting there, and it's in the conservative world, it's in broader mainstream non-evangelical world have paid attention to what we're trying to say, but it's still a very explicit Christian message. And I tell a lot of these people who aren't Christians, because one of the complaints says, "Why, you know, if you just made your film much more less Christian and just, you know, kept it so it's just a message about what they should be doing, then you would sell more." And obviously we can't do that, but we do realize that if we do a good enough job, which is not what most I think Christian filmmakers do, is they think by merit of them being Christian, they can get away with a bad quality product and bad production and a bad argument. And really what we're doing in a documentary is making an argument. So the success of indoctrination is that we had a very good argument. It was very carefully thought through, and we spent a lot of time before we actually released the film in terms of the voice that we had, not just what we said, but how we said it and how we knew it would be received by different audiences. That's a tricky thing to do. We're presenting ideas that are non-mainstream. Our ideas pretty much all of our ideas aren't mainstream. So we're counterculture. We're very much against the flow of the ongoing tide towards secularism and humanism. And so we're this contrarian perspective. And particularly, obviously, the subjects that we've covered. You know, our first film was Shaky Town. And we went to make Monstrous Regiment. If you know this, you know those films, you'll know that they are very combative, contrarian films dealing with important issues. But the opportunity is there for us to present these non-mainstream ideas because there's no limitation on us. We don't need a lot of money. We don't need a lot of access because we're not dependent on distributors anymore. We completely cut the distributor out. We're not even particularly dependent upon retailers anymore. People can't come and get our product directly from us. We deliver them our message. And people are very aware, and I'm sure you're aware, is that you can find the documentary to fit the need. You want to find a documentary on almost any subject. That's what's happening right now. One of the other areas that I think documentaries, why documentaries work so well is that I believe real stories are effective. In terms of communicating and persuading people, the most effective way, I think, is to present them the reality of stories that they can relate to. Part of what we do with documentary film, as a documentary filmmaker, is to imagine my audience like a jury, and I'm the lawyer, and I'm sitting there in my wheelchair. The wheelchair guy, that's me. I'm the lawyer defending a case or making a case and trying to make this great case to argue to this jury. Now, who's on that jury? Well, the truth is, anybody is on that jury. And we've really got to be aware of it. And I don't just mean it's like Christians and non-Christians. I'm thinking mainly the fact that there's going to be women, men, there's going to be old and young, there's going to be different colors and backgrounds and languages and things like that. And that's what we're presenting the case to. And some arguments will work with some will work with others. And so we have to be careful when we make this story that we have enough stories that are going to persuade people. The biggest mistake we see in Christian documentary filmmaking repeatedly is the presentation where someone has an idea for a film, and I made this mistake too, so it's a normal mistake, is they have an idea, they want to persuade people over an issue, and so they find 15 people that have the same perspective as them and put them in the film. And the problem comes from the fact that the people that they bring in to present the argument are just like them. Now, they might actually be presenting a good argument, but the question is, why should I listen to these people? Why should anyone listen to an angry Scottish guy, when they can listen to someone who is an eyewitness to an actual happening and testify to the actual facts? As a filmmaker, I'm a pundit in a sense. I'm not an expert. I become knowledgeable, obviously, of the subjects that we cover, but I'm still, to some extent, just a pundit. So what's my job as a filmmaker? And this is true for good journalism, is I step back and I bring these other people to you to make a case. So that's what we need to know when we make documentary films. And people are moved by stories. If you've seen Indoctrination, you know there are three or four stories in there that really work. And what we're doing there is we're bringing stories to create a change in someone's heart because they find that person particularly relatable, and they have empathy for that person as they tell their story, and they understand in a way that we can't understand it. Now, the joke I say is that when I make a documentary, I write the script, and then I find people to say the things I wrote in the script, and that's absolutely true. It's not bad journalism to do that. I know what I want to say with my documentary. In fact, we're different than most of the secular documentarians in that we admit our worldview. We tell you what we believe, tell you that the Word of God is primary, and what we what we do and what we say. Our presuppositions are there up front, but then we make a case on top of that and try and to persuade people on the details and our premise. That's very different from Michael Moore, who Michael Moore always makes these films where he, you know, goes around and pretends he doesn't know anything, and then just happens to find that the only solution is a socialist solution, you know, and it's a joke. It's a really awful way, and we don't want to be like that as Christian filmmakers. And it's so obvious when you start to watch his films from that perspective, you realize this trick, and they do it all the time on television as well, you know, CNN. I don't really know. I'm going to ask some questions, and of course they're all stacked. It's all the worldview just comes through. We state our worldview up front. We've got a privilege in documentary filmmaking as opposed to the feature film guys, and I love the feature film guys. I think they're great. I don't think I can do anything like what they do. The hard part of what they do is they've got to do way more in terms of couching the way they deliver things, limiting the amount of message deliberately within the film so that it's palatable for the entertainment-oriented community. We don't need to do that. Our film stayed up front what we believe, and then we're going to tell you for the next hour and a half you're going to hear our argument. We can be hard-hitting and very clear, and that's why I think documentaries are the best investment for the church, for the Christian community. The entertainment stuff is important, but you got to understand documentaries, I think, is where the battleground will be. So that's where we're committing our time. The other aspect of documentary films is this great thing that it comes in a little box, a package. And this seems like a small thing, but what we have in media right now is information that can be passed along and distributed very easily. As I said, we've cut out the distributor. We've cut out even some of the retailers. We can go directly to people with our message. We even know, and this is really how our film has worked, is that we have a grassroots form of communication, that our film is transitioned from people, one person to another, so that we hear when people have watched our film that they got it from the church or a friend had it, and it's been, that's how our film is working, and it has been successful, and we're getting calls, telephone calls and emails almost consistently since the release of the film. It's not all the time, but you know, every week or so we'll get someone who will get in touch with us saying that they watched Indoctrination and now they don't use the public school system. And it's the packaged medium is this excellent tool that you can use. You know, when you have the opportunity to sit down with someone, can you deliver to them an hour and a half speech on why the public schools are bad? I can't. It's hard for anyone to do that. The best option is to have this little package, which is the Indoctrination DVD, to give to someone and leave it with them. The other side of that is it's not you saying that message because your friends are tired of hearing it from you. I'm this other Scottish guy and I'll take the flak, you know. So that's the grenade you can throw in the room and leave and not worry. And they will hate me, not you, which is a good thing. So it's easier now than ever before to make documentaries. When we started making documentary films, you know, we had a camera. It was a very low-res camera, bad quality camera. This is 10 years ago when we made our first film. We had, you know, it was very difficult to pull everything together. We were still capturing it on little mini tapes. So you would film it on the mini tape in our VX2000 Sony camera, and we would capture it, and it would take a long time, and the quality wasn't anywhere near what it is now. Now we're all using DSLR cameras, and the quality is really amazing right now in terms of, so it's easier now than ever before. Our, you know, but that helps budgets. You know, to do what we are doing, if we were in the 90s, would be impossible. It would cost hundreds of, you know, $500,000 easily to get cameras even close to the quality that we're using. We'd probably have to shoot on film. The cameras would be weigh a ton and all the rest. But what we have right now in terms of technology is incredible, and it's our opportunity to use that for the sake of the kingdom of God. Easily distributed. I think I mentioned that when I was talking about this package. It's something that we can get to the Christian community and get around the Christian community very easily. So how did I end up doing this? So as I said earlier, I was working in the video games industry for Atari. I was actually moved from Atari into the simulation industry. I was working in military simulation for a short while. But I was looking while I was in that world up there in the Silicon Valley, wondering what I need to be doing for the kingdom of God. I have these gifts, and I had limited gifts. I was okay, artistically, not a great reader, writer, you know, or manager or anything like that. Just pretty much someone who was creative, had ideas, and wanted to be creative in some media way. And so we realized that the documentary film serves that marriage of somewhat of a technical process, which I was also good at. I was a 3D animator, which is very technical, and a creative pursuit, which the documentary is very much a very creative pursuit. And also it involves one of my favorite hobbies, which is to argue. I love arguing and debating people to the point of offense. But it's something that gets me really excited, and it's something that makes it, I really do believe we need to be persuasive. The joke is, he's a Scotsman, walks into a room, and his job is to find the person in that room that disagrees with him, and that's who he'll spend the night with. Because he will find an opportunity to find where he can disagree and argue. Our issues, they're saying, I think there's a lot of things that need to be argued. Things we don't talk about within the church. For example, some of the things we're talking about in our film, indoctrination, which is an avoided subject in churches. You know, we don't get shown in a lot of churches, or we have been shown in churches, but a lot of churches, we try to get our film screened in Austin. We went to all of the churches. Obviously, you know, Don Hart's on board, but a lot of our churches are like, nah, it's okay, we don't want it. Because it's such a controversial message. But we need this argument. We need to be confrontational on this issue. Our first film, Shaky Town, is about San Francisco homosexual politics, which is a weird thing to do a first film on. But the reason for that is where I was. I was in the Bay Area, over on the East Bay, but our church was in San Francisco proper. And our pastor had been persecuted over the years, from the late 70s onwards. He had this fight with the homosexual community. He was known as the anti-homosexual pastor, him and another pastor, and he was persecuted to the point that they firebombed his house back in the early 80s. And most people don't know about this story. And this is the other amazing thing about Christian documentary filmmaking. We're telling stories that will never get told otherwise, because the mainstream media is not interested in this. You know, you've seen it with your own eyes when you watch mainstream media. Why are they not mentioning this story or that story that I'm hearing from these other websites? Why isn't this in the mainstream news? Well, it's because their worldview. We all know the liberal press, the mainstream media is primarily liberal, certainly secular humanist, and it's certainly even the conservative media has a problem as well in terms of how they present the facts. So we had this opportunity, a story right there. And if you're interested in filmmaking, this is what I tell people all the time, is the opportunity for all of you is to start right now with the stories that are right there around you. You know, the most important film you could make right now as a young person is to film grandma and grandpa and ask them about their stories. Put a camera in front of them, and you will never ever regret that commitment of time. And it's very easy to do. Tell people all the time, the primary tool of a filmmaker is their iPhone, which you have all the time. And when I have a little microphone, what I put in here, and I do podcasts. Because you get this with you all the time, you have this opportunity to constantly create media. Now, of course, a lot of nonsense is out there in terms of those that think that everything is relevant. You go to Instagram and you'll see everyone thinks everything's relevant, and it's not. But the opportunity is that there's stories there for the taking, and you're right next to them. You don't even know it. And the opportunity for us to be the media, the church, will be mainstream media if we took that opportunity. And, you know, having that iPhone when the cop pulls you over, you know, when you know, something happens in your church, a conversation starts in church about a particular theological subject. Very interesting. That's what I grew up on, because I was in a church without a youth group. And I was there with the adults. That's the interesting stuff. Pull out a camera, start filming it. So the stories are right there. So that was our first film. We won, to our huge shock, Best Political Film at the San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival. And that was amazing. We never thought we'd win anything. We never thought anyone would be interested. Actually, no one was, except for the San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival, which was testimony to the philosophy of that organization, that they would accept that this film, that even our, you know, the churches that we were involved with were like, oh, good job, you know, not that excited about this organization was favorable and understand what we were trying to do and what we were trying to say. We captured a crucial event in history. We were there when Gavin Newsom pretended that he was king for the day and decided to say that marriage now wasn't between men and women, it could be between men and other men and women and all that stuff. Now, we were there to capture that. We were right there. We went up to the offices. Gavin Newsom's in the film slightly as he walks through the corridor as the pastors are up there talking. We had pastors talking in the front of the steps of the city hall. And we were there to capture something that was, no one else was there. You know, it was on mainstream media, but from the completely the other side. And no one was there on the negative side, but we were. And we were interviewing the lawyers that were involved from the Alliance Defense Fund who were defending the Christian perspective. So we captured something very unique, and it's almost 10 years, 10 years next year from our first step into production. That's our film Shaky Time. That, as I said, we're close to the story. Then what did I do? So this is all a progression. To give you an idea of the reality of what it takes, we didn't go full-time in media until really our last three films. The first two films there, the one in the middle is a feature film I act in badly. The first two are Shaky Down Monstrous Regiment, were our first two films that we produced. The Monstrous Regiment is on feminism. You know, we were looking for films that really represented where we were at the time, and looking for a subject matter. We knew these are priorities. You know, it takes us so long. It's not easy making a film. It's a huge commitment. So we have to pick your subjects carefully. Now, I mean, that sounds like contradictory to the always have your camera out all the time and film everything. But it's not really. When you go make a documentary as opposed to frequent media, and I believe there's two are very valuable. Frequent media, which I do, which is podcasts and little videos I get. And then there's over here the produced documentaries for a very specific purpose. So Monstrous became our next film after Shaky Time, which represented our views on womanhood. Now, we went and interviewed just women, although the crazy thing is we got a lot of hate mail for all of our films. And we're not getting that much. We're not Kevin Swanson. But we get a lot of people complaining. And that was the one that really offended people. I was always told that I hated women. And I'd always say, but our film is only women. There's only women talking in it. You know, my wife helped write it. She narrates it, and then we interviewed all these women. They'll say, "Oh, these women are brainwashed." That's how they would say it. And I'm always going to find that pretty funny when you know people like Phyllis Schlafly and Jenny Chansey, and you know their intellectual capacity and ability. Brainwashing them would be a stretch. And the kind of hate mail that we got was just, you know, the usual rants against patriarchy and against the Christian view of womanhood. Sadly, in our premise in that film is that the feminism harms women, and the blessing of women following biblical womanhood is the key to happiness in the home. So I don't think that's a controversial message, but it seems to be. And then we went on to make a few other films, obviously Indoctrination. Then Captivated is a film that I directed, and it's about media overconsumption. That's the first film that I didn't control or own, so I took it on as a project. The main reason for that is it was a worldview perspective that I agreed with, and I think the issue of media overconsumption, which is interesting that I'm up here arguing for frequent media and lots of media. Well, it's really, there's two areas there. One, it's quality in terms of what is the message, what is being presented. Most people, including Christians, are spending their time watching the wrong kind of media, and then they're watching too much of that wrong kind of media. There's a concern about watching too much of the right kind of media, but if there's a right kind of media, my argument is it's documentary film. So we went on to make a film called Act Like Men. I was executive producer, which is the best job anyone can have on a film project. You just basically wave your hand over the project. You help pick the title, tagline, and say, you know, edit, get people to edit things. You don't do a whole lot, which is excellent. And we made this film.
This is a trailer. When the brave will come to die, when the end will draw me nigh, "Votes for Women" was the cry.
public's curiosity about the Titanic has never been fully sated. It's a story of sacrifice. It's a story of men knowing that they're going to their deaths and being okay with that.
The whole egalitarian approach is really a derivative of the survival of the fittest idea that comes out of Charles Darwin. And we lose biblical gender roles. We lose the idea that we are created in the image of God with certain responsibilities as men or as women.
We have to remember that feminism is not simply about the rights of women, but it's about the removal of gender distinctions.
The fathers have too many diversionary activities. They have things that just get in the way of the discipleship of their children.
The idea of women and children first is something that has been part of Western civilization's inheritance, but we have lost so much of that today. And now it's pretty much every man for himself.
We're getting more stunning images from Italy of the battered Costa Concordia.
The Concordia was more than 3 nautical miles off course when it hit the underwater rock.
Very much like the Titanic, as people have been learning all day, this beer ship made a rip down the side of the ship.
There are new audio recordings also showing that the captain may have lied to rescue workers.
To live like a man is to live in obedience to the laws of God.
God is the creator. We don't submit to God's rules and God's definitions for manhood and for life. We will see our systems breaking down. If we don't fix this one, if the church does not speak to this one, we are dead. We are not going to survive. Just the tip of the iceberg.
So to give you a perspective on what's possible for young men, this film was produced by a handful of young men in Pennsylvania who, you know, they have very limited means. They don't have large budgets. Not many of us do in the Christian film independent world, but these guys work very hard on another job in their own business, and then they put this together in their spare time, and it was very hard to meet that deadline. It was a 100-year anniversary, so they had to meet it. You know, it wasn't going to come around again. So they had the opportunity to release that film on this subject, and they did it. And it's been a successful film with, you know, just very limited means and very young men who had the zeal to communicate on a very important message, which is the principle of women and children first, the principle of self-sacrifice that we learn in relation to manliness that we learn from the Titanic story. A little bit about what the philosophy of Christian filmmaking is. One is purpose. Why do I want to make films? None of us are particularly getting rich or famous these films. That's a mistake to get into it from in any way. You know, that's just the disaster that we often see in filmmaking is the ego. Those that think that being a film director is the most powerful and creative and most perfect position to be in just for the sake of it. There really has to be a proper worldview. So, you know, planting your children firmly in that, in the perspective of glorifying God in all that you do, to put yourself last, to put others first, and put the message that God wants you to deliver in your film first is also the other aspect of that. And being in filmmaking for the right reasons is really the test, and it comes through in all the films that I've seen, at least in the Christian sphere. Why are people making these films? The mistake that we're seeing a lot in the young sphere is the imitation of the action movie, because that's what they're brought up on, and they're watching a lot of films where there's heroes that don't behave particularly ethically, and the excitement is in the gunplay and violence, and that attracts a lot of young people. I was at a Christian Film Festival, which wasn't San Antonio, and it was a good festival, it was very good instruction and everything, but all of the teams that had young men in it oriented itself towards violent storytelling with guns. Now, I'm fine on violence violent stories and war stories and all the rest, but in a biblical context. And so everything begins with, it has to begin with worldview up. And then you have to also see your, what are your motivations in communicating this message? Because the thing about art and any form of self-expression is it's public. And especially if it's communicative like a documentary film, you're putting yourself out there, so you have to be very careful about what is the message and why am I trying to say it, what are the results I'm expecting from it. We're presenting the good news, the gospel, which we don't limit to just this one, you know, evangelistic statement. We broaden the term gospel and good news to the whole counsel of God and all the things that we want to present. And our films are narrow in the sense that we are usually persuading people on one issue, but obviously, it's very clear when you look at our film is the ultimate goal. And we make that clear in the film Indoctrination. If you've seen it in several areas, we make it clear. Or for the start, we're believers, believe in the foundation of the Word of God. And it's, I think it's very clear through the whole film. And then at the end, we're very clear about the primary purpose of delivering your children from the public schools, which is not to make them smarter and let them win spelling bees and be known as being successful and you get a pat on the back for being a homeschooler, but because of the sake of saving their souls. And so that's the if their gospel and word of God is your premise, that's how you will be driven through the film. And it helps to have other people that counsel you in that, because sometimes you'll have ideas that are away or less have less emphasis on that aspect. Law, there's two aspects to this. We have a very high view of the law of God. We believe the law of God, including the Old Testament, is applicable to all areas of our lives and society. But also we want to make our films lawfully. So there's rules in the law of God that apply directly to filmmaking. We make sure we're honoring the Lord's Day, that we're not stealing, that we're not getting in debt. All these rules apply very much to filmmakers. And the problem is for filmmakers, that's usually the first thing they turn to is, debt, working schedules that break their responsibilities towards their families and all those things. So we're taking every frame captive and trying to seek to glorify God in every aspect of production, which, you know, we've learned a lot since Shaky Town. If you see Shaky Town, you'll agree that we've learned a lot. We didn't know what we were doing, and we've realized there's all these different aspects to filmmaking that we've had to become, take dominion for Christ's sake, so that we're good examples in the sound editing, the graphic design, and the music, and all the rest of it. So here's the how to make a documentary thing, which is, you know, in some sense, it's, as I sort of intimated, documentaries are the low-hanging fruit of the filmmaking world. Documentaries can be done by very small teams. They can also be done in very small budgets. They can also be done in little sections, which actually is the biggest attribute of the economics of making a documentary film, is that I can shoot an interview one day, and then I cannot do anything on it, and then 3 months later, I can shoot another documentary, and I can go work on something else. And that's how I pretty much made Monstrous Regiment, is we used the small amounts of money that we had in savings that would come in, and we would use those for budget for the film, and then we'd just go film when we could and when it was convenient, and then we'd film when we were at a conference, we'd go find people and interview there. And so there's ways to make it very economical. Here's some of the, it's actually a little bit more philosophical, vision, and know where you're going, what you want to do with this thing, what's the purpose of the documentary you're making, the premise. The premise, I'm not very good at premises that for films. They actually work better for feature films who tend to have less. They tend to be on one singular idea or philosophy. With documentaries, you have one main theme, but then you have multiple arguments within it. So a premise is actually kind of hard to come up with, but it helps to have one paragraph or sentence that sums up the concept of the film. The audience, who are you trying to reach with this film? Who do you want to convert? There's a lot of debate, and there's other documentarians that we meet, and that's some of our conversation. Who are we going to reach? Is this aimed at the mainstream audience? The Indoctrination was firmly aimed at the church. Our new film, which we'll talk about in a minute, is aimed at, in a broader way, to a lot of the people out there who I think will understand our message, who most of them would not understand Indoctrination. casting. You know, if you're in one of my other seminars, I talk quite a bit about the eyewitness idea, and I mentioned it earlier as me being Perry Mason. The expert witnesses and eyewitnesses are the two aspects of the casting that we have. You know, we're like feature films in a sense. And in one of the senses that we're like feature films is that we go and find, we put people in our films and we decide who's in the film. And the way that is similar to the casting process in Hollywood or with feature films where we say, well, he doesn't look quite right, or she's this or whatever, and they find the very best person to say to be the actor. We do the same. We're very conscious of who we bring into our film. And as I said, the jury can be anybody, so we have to be careful who we pick. You know, how do they talk? And sometimes it's interesting, the people you think would be good and important for your film don't do well in the interview, and it's sometimes the people that are more off the cuff and more natural and more real, more authentic, that do a better job. So we often have a keen eye. That sometimes just comes out in the editing in terms of who we include and who we don't, or who we focus on more. But that's what we're thinking when we actually bring people into the film. We didn't do that before. As I said, we were bringing people in that were just kind of like us, you know, which were, you know, white middle class people. And then we had to reach out and find people that represented more of the American cross culture. And that's just a tactic that we're thinking about. Style is more what we're trying to do right now in terms of trying to raise our quality in the camera and editing techniques, animation and music. You know, we believe that the big issue with documentarians is that you, at the very start, before they even put your DVD into the DVD player, as they walk across the room to put that DVD in the DVD player, they're already bored. And it's your job to make sure that the minute they put that thing in, you're winning them over and not boring them. If you bore them, they're already there. They're not going to watch it. It's our job to capture them as soon as you can. And there's techniques that we've learned. We just, you know, Christians have this naive idea that, well, it's Christian, we can do it any way we feel like, and if God will bless you, he'll bless it. Well, no, there's techniques which have been developed in television. Now, there's bad techniques which are kind of insulting to your intelligence if you watch, you know, mainstream television where they have booms going and audio booms all the time and flashes on the screen just to wake you up every 30 seconds. I don't mean that, but there's certainly techniques and to make things interesting. You know, change the subject when it merits changing something after, you know, 5 minutes. Do 5 minutes on something, not 32 minutes on something, which is the big problem. I'm a believer in both short form and long form media. I think there's some people need the long form, so you can make a case in our film Indoctrination merited the long form because we had one big issue that we had to talk about with multifacets. A lot of subjects don't need it, and they merit the 30-minute documentary. And that's, you know, so you got to really think about what you're delivering. That's the part of editing techniques. The cameras, all the stuff we've learned. The best thing to do, if you're like me, is to rely on other people to do that stuff for you. There's only so much the director, writer, producer can do, and it's not often being behind the camera, although I'm behind the camera a lot more in this documentary because I'm talking to a lot more people directly through the camera lens, so we're using that technique. And then animation and music, these things that good animation and good music carries people through a boring film. The most boring subject is usually history for a lot of people, average person. I'm going to talk to you about what went on in the 1800s. And that's when they leave. And we realized that. We knew that about the film. And we knew that we had to bring this idea to people. So we put a lot of effort into that segment of the film where we started with this animated bus that goes along the timeline and all the bad guys jump on the bus. So we make it interesting and entertaining. There's lots going on for people to look at that keeps them involved in this bit, which would potentially be the most boring part of the film because we would be talking to, you know, historians with bookshelves behind them. That's the way they usually do those segments. So how to make a documentary. Content, research your topic thoroughly and decide what points need to be made. And actually, I was going to show you something just to give you an idea of what it takes to make a documentary film. And this is, let me see, it's in Google Docs here. Now, this is stuff that I don't know if we want this to go on camera, because these are personal phone numbers. So, but what we do here is, so if we point the camera somewhere else, I wanted to show you this just to show you what production notes are. To give you an idea, this totally de-glamorizes documentary filmmaking. A spreadsheet, right? Nothing more boring than a spreadsheet. And this is really my life. And this is what I work on all the time. And this is the spreadsheet. This page is remaining interviews for the film we're making right now. So you might recognize some of the names of people in the UK and people in Texas. That's all we've got left to do right now. We have some stories there. I apologize if your name and phone number is on this list. I think Adam McManus is on this list somewhere, I'm sure. So post-production schedule, which we're trying to work out. Production notes, everyone that we tried to get in the film and failed, everyone that agreed to an interview, is all in this document. They're turned green. These are the people that agreed to do the story. This is the whole document. It goes down to the bottom here. I think at the bottom here are all the people that we've interviewed for our new film. That's them all there. Okay. Schedule. This is our recent schedule for August. This is all of where we're at. So if you look over there, you all see this. Texas. We had a tour. We did interviews in Texas. Went up to Oklahoma, St. Louis, Michigan, Washington D.C., Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York. And that was 3 weeks. So you can see that's what we do. It took 3 weeks, took 6 months to plan. So that's sort of the reality of, you know, that it's all in the spreadsheet. It's the crazy part of it. And more on here, we have gear lists, updated gear lists. So we have Corey Cheney writes out the equipment that we need, and I buy it, and that's how we do it. We have DP list, who's available, who isn't. This is for the diner of all the people that we had a diner scene that we wanted to shoot. These are all the people that we managed to get in the diner. There's Adam McManus right there. I guess I better not show that. Secrets. Anyway, the diner scene, all of this is our shot list of all the shots that we wanted to show while we were at this one day shoot, and this is the shot list. So this shot list, you know, takes days and days and days and days to work out, and you know, we shoot it in a day. So this, I'm showing you this to show you all of the this is the schedule for that day, all the people, when they arrive and what they do, costumes and all the rest of it. So, you know, this is to sort of show you the level we're at, the kind of attention that we give in pre-production. This is a fairly intensive job when you get to the feature-length documentary level. The most of the work is this sitting in your office, and all you do is phone calls, spreadsheets, and emails. But it's very worthwhile. The end of it, you get that documentary film. So that's content, you know, so finding content. So, you know, what's in a documentary? Well, it's people that you interview, there's stories that you want to tell, there's then other things like, you know, music and all the rest of it, which relates to post-production structure. You know, how do you present this argument? What we've learned is that there's already a structure there for filmmakers. So filmmakers, there's a way to make a film, and I've had to learn this in the last few years, I think, as a lot of other filmmakers have, who just thought you just go make a film, right? You just start filming and you use your brain and it works like you write a book. Well, no, there's rules to it, and there's rules of people who have made hundreds of thousands of movies, millions of movies. Hollywood has done it, and what we can glean from Hollywood is the part of the story structure, which is how we designed the film Indoctrination. It's not a perfect structure for documentaries. It certainly applies in that you bring people on a story, you have an antagonist and a protagonist in the Indoctrination. The antagonist is the bus is the enemy. The bus meets its end at the end of the film, like all good cowboy movies, and the bus is the problem. And it's the symbol that we use. Another part of documentary filmmaking that I have to talk about is funding. We have three levels of those that want to that make our film happen. We don't. You are not at that stage yet where we have our own capital. Lord willing, we will have our own capital to just keep making movies, and we'll use the money from the last one and the next one and the next one. But that's not where we are at. It's the Lord's will that we still have to go and get money from these three sources: sponsors, donors, and investors. Sponsors come on board because they have the same message as us, and it's kind of a good relationship. They definitely want media made, but they're not going to risk making a film, but they can risk some money to be part of this project. And it's worked very well for our sponsors, as they've sponsored us and they get their name, as they have with Indoctrination, that's gone all over America, and their name is on it, and their involvement was the sponsorship money, which we're very grateful for. And I think we've blessed their ministries back in measure as a result of that agreement. Donors, people give us money to make the film. We have backstage passes that we sell where you get special access to the film before everyone else. That's our other strategy, and that's worked well too. And then we have investors, people who are always Christian, want to give money, don't want to lose money, is give it away, but they get a return, and a decent return, and we've always paid them back. Big part of documentary filmmaking is the team and leaders, partners, those that you work with. It's not a solitary act. It's something that you can do, or you must do, with good counsel and good staff, and that's where we are. Finding good people to work with is the key to making good films, and then getting support of church and family and prayer and wise counsel as you go along. And then, of course, time. This takes a lot of time. So as I said, it's of the production level when we're actually filming, if you add it all up, it's probably about a month of work, of days. The rest of it is 2 years. 6 months to a year at least of fundraising, and we're still fundraising, and then you go into production and you're writing and you're just, and it's a very weird job just to be sitting there. like my job now, I mean, this is the cruel irony of what I do, is I have to read all the time, and I thinking I'm going to go into video games, and now I'm doing this job where my primary job is to study and read. And I read all the Obamacare books, I read all the websites, talk about Obamacare, and this is for our new film, which we'll talk about in a second, and you're committed intellectually to this work, which is the other mistake I think other documentarians make, is they don't realize that you have to be at a high level in your understanding of this. And I think the best documentaries come from those that really know the subject, like Curtis Bowers is a good example, where the filmmaking aspect was secondary to his knowledge of the subject first. So that's what we find. That's where I think the best documentaries are coming from, the people who know their subject, have a story to tell. And the documentary, the technical stuff follows them, but that's the key, is that they had that knowledge and ability. That's the test. Of course, a lot of you know about the San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival, but I this is the main place you need to go. I go every year. It is the place. It's the place, only place we hire from. We hire people. They have to have gone here. They have to have know what it's about and understand the philosophy. Because the reason is if they've been here and they know what goes on here, they're usually pretty grounded and knowledgeable of the philosophy of Christian filmmaking. So when we bring them in, we're not starting from scratch. We're going to have less problems because they've done the work here. And I recommend it very highly, just partly because you may get hired, but you may get on teams. There's lots of projects coming up all the time now, and it's teams of volunteer filmmakers getting together and making great projects together. And this is where it's happening. And so going here is pretty much prerequisite to be to get your find your place in the Christian film industry. So what do you do? As I said, San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival and Academy. Internship, we have interns that come in. If you're interested in that, it's we have people that come to Waco and work with us. We also have people that work at home and do other kind of stuff like web work and other things. So we're always willing to engage people. The exciting part of being an intern is you're doing stuff that you would not be normally doing. We had interns who got to come on a three-week arduous tour across America and got to meet some of the most important people in the healthcare sphere right now. that the people that are on CNN, people that are, you know, getting on a big, you know, well-known placement in media, they're there with me because they're in our film. And I, you know, the trick of documentary filmmaking is you get to meet all these people. I always tell people, if you want to meet your heroes, pretend you're making a documentary film. It's really great. Just start a project. As I said, get your iPhone out and film grandma. Get commit some time, start to get some ideas going, and start a project. Don't start something so huge that it's impossible to ever complete, but start something, and you know, it might start and it might fail. You might have to give up, which giving up is fine too, but it's the process where you get most of your learning done. Starting something in the documentary sphere is the right thing to do. I've seen a really nice documentary. I was at a film festival and they had a documentary on bees. On bees buzz around. That was just amazing little documentary that enthralled me. And it's a great little way to just pick a subject and I'm going to talk about it, I'm going to learn about it, and then I'm going to make a video project from it. And as I said, getting knowledge is the big thing. The big thing in practical terms is get broad knowledge and then specific skills. So understand the film industry, understand all the parts to it, and then find your niche and get very specific skills in that niche. So become good at one thing. This is mainly for those that aren't going to be writers, directors, and producers just yet, but those that want to be involved, get very good at one thing. And you will be a huge blessing to the bigger teams. Get good at lighting, get good at sound editing, get good at color correcting, get good at editing. One of those things can make you employable for your whole year. I know young men who make a living based on a few small skills that they have. So they went from understanding the whole thing to getting very good at one or two small things within the industry. Put in your 10,000 hours, work hard, commit time to involving your family and church and all that you do. You know, we shot recently with a day shoot and we had all these people from our church come along. Our family's frequently involved in our filmmaking process, and that's the delight of the Christian film industry and the ability to do that. So what's next for us? Our new film. I think I've probably given you as many clues, if I've not mentioned outright, that we're making a film on healthcare, which is called Wait Till It's Free. And this film looks at healthcare from a Christian perspective. And it's very interesting that there's so many tangents from indoctrination. Indoctrination, you're a government intrusion into a sphere, making that product very expensive at a very low quality. And that's where we're going, obviously, with Obamacare. But it's not just Obamacare, it's the intrusion that we've seen for many years into the health care sphere, everything from the licensing of doctors through to the drug prohibition. All of those things have come together in this disaster. And of course, in America, when we have a disaster, we double down with an even stupider idea than the one that caused that disaster. And so, I'm an American, by the way, I'm not insulting you all. So people, this is what we've got with Obamacare. And Obamacare is obviously the political focus right now. And it is a terrible idea. But the issue is, we have bigger problems in our church in terms of health and what we haven't been doing and what we should have been doing in terms of personal responsibility and also church responsibility. There's a philosophy there that Christians need to hear, but we also need to see why things are the way they are before Obamacare happened. Why is it so expensive for health care and insurance? Are we doing health care the way we should be doing it? The answer is simply no. And our film is an optimistic film, like Indoctrination, although Indoctrination is a very negative film. Depending on what side you're on, the message at the end is you can leave. And in a sense, that's what we're going to do in healthcare, is we have to have this alternative strategy that's established in a Christian worldview with Christian doctors practicing in a Christian way and Christian patients understanding the limitations of what those doctors can do and being realistic and not idolatrous about what healthcare is and can be. So let's watch the trailer here.
Over a year of debate.
Even before the incarnation of our Lord, there were principles of medicine that were applied to do no harm to the patient.
Today, after all the votes have been tallied,
I'm convinced that if there is not a reversal of this federal mandate for government control in medicine, that much harm will not only be done to the individual patient that I see in the office, but to all the patients that are represented by our culture. Because of the foundation of this, what I believe to be clearly unconstitutional law,
health insurance reform becomes law in the United States.
If an individual responsibility for a decision, not the responsibility of government, to watch out, folks. Government has no delegation to use any means of force or persuasion by bribing to deal medicine as individual.
One of the things people need to know about Obamacare is that we have government intervention like this. It serves to treat the mass as a whole, not the individual. And that's what's so important about our American health care system, is that we treat the individual, not the number, not the statistics. We treat the individual, and it takes that away. That's what's dangerous, and that's when soul leaves medicine.
The people who suffer most when government gains control are the people that the government sees as non-productive. This is spelled out in the medical literature, those at the lower end of the scale, the children in whom we don't have a lot invested, or the old people who can no longer pay so much taxes and who are a drain on the system. These are the ones whose care will be rationed.
Okay, fun stuff. Thank you. Now, I don't know if I have any time for questions, or we should probably just one or two. Let's take one, maybe one or two questions. Anybody with questions, I'm actually happy to do the questions. You can meet me at my booth and ask me some questions if you have any. Okay, so thank you very much.